I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
That is Patrick Hester. He is a podcaster and an author as well, and he's got a brand new book out as well. It's called Into the Fire. It is the Samantha Cain Volume 1. It's available through Wordfire Press. It's on ebook and trade paperback right there. He's showing the cover. So go and check that out. My name is John Anelio. Today, we are joined by Kristen Britton. She is the New York Times bestselling author of the Green Rider series, including the brand new book, Firebrand, out today, February 28th. Go and pick it up. And you could check our website out, kristenbritton.com. Kristen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a bit of a serendipity that we're having you on now on the day of your book release, but it's very exciting, I think. Now, this is the sixth book in the series, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I know Patrick and Patrick's mom are big fans of the series. That's how this came. We had Julie Cherneda on the show a few weeks back, and she mentioned that she's friends with you. And she's like, Kristen has it. And so Patrick's like, I love Kristen, and so does my mom. So that's how this all came about.
Well,
so,
yeah, I love it. I love it when the families, you know, share the books around. That's
well,
great.
Well, what happened was several years ago, I had moved to Colorado and I'd been living here for a few years. And my mom was in a very bad relationship in California. And she called me up and said, I've left him and I don't have anything. I don't have money. I don't have anything. What do I do? And I said, well, mom, you come and live with me and we'll get you back on your feet. And so she did. And I have a lot of books. A lot of books. And one of them is the one that I'm holding up for the camera right now, which is The Green Rider. And this is a book that for whatever reason, mom, she never wanted to go through my books. She never would read my books. She never touched my books. And I'm like, mom, they're books. They're here to be read. You should read them. And this is the one that she picked out. And she read it and she's like, I really like that. And I said, oh, well, you know, here's the sequel. And for the sequel, I actually got the hardcovers. So every book since, I've gotten the hardcovers. I have the paperback of the first one because I was late to the party and I apologize. And so she read the second book and she's like, I really like this. Is there another one? And I said, well, no, not yet. And then that's when it started. Like every couple of weeks, she would go, is there a new Green Rider book yet? And I'm like, no. But soon, she's written one and it's going to come out soon. She's like, okay, well, when it does, I want it. I'm like, okay. And then like a month would go by. Is that book out yet?
There is, you should tell your mom to go to Kristen's website because I was looking at the frequently asked questions and that is a frequently asked question to Kristen and she has a very thorough explanation as to why the book
and then I get her the next book when it came, like it was like launch day. I was at Barnes & Noble, I was waiting and I bought the hardcover and she reads it before I do. And she read it. She's like, that was really, really good. I'm like, oh, okay, good. She's like, when's the next one coming? I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You just got the book.
Should get her out, you know, with a sign. That's great.
So, yeah. So, definitely a Green Rider family around here.
Really glad to hear that.
Great. All right. Well, we're gonna launch into our picks of the week in a moment. Before we do that, I want to take just a second to let our listeners know. First of all, thanking our listeners who are Patreon backers of us, the people that back us on Patreon. It helps us put the show out every week. We are very appreciative of them. Thank you so much. You make the show possible. If you enjoy the show and you enjoy interviews with folks like Kristen, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com. And now let's get into our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Kristen, what is your pick this week?
One of the best things that I have seen recently is the movie Hidden Figures. I just thought it was a fabulous story. And it was well acted, well produced, well directed. And I would go see it again in a moment. I have the book sitting on my pile to be read. So I can't wait to get into that.
And maybe you can give our listeners a little bit of a backstory about what the subject matter is of that book.
The subject matter is about the computers, who were actually people before there were a lot of computers, creating calculations for sending United States astronauts into space. And these particular, the story of these computers, who are actual people, centers around three African-American women. And so you get a little bit of the time period, which is 1960s. And I came away from the whole thing feeling very proud of my country and the space program and so forth.
Fantastic. So book and movie. So check that out. Yeah, that's been on my to read, to watch list for quite some time now too. So I'll have to bump that up. Cool. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
John, I finally sat down and watched The Magicians on Netflix.
Oh, I have not gotten to it yet.
I'm about 10 episodes into the 13 that are available. Mm-hmm. And Lev Grossman is a fan of the podcast, or a friend of the podcast, I should say. And we've chatted with him before. And I think the reason I didn't watch this when it was on the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi is simply because of the way the schedule works, is like they broke it up and I didn't get it. It just complicated. So it's just so much easier for me to watch it on Netflix and kind of binge mm-hmm. it, and have been loving it, just absolutely loving it. So
have you read the books?
I have not series. Read the books, but I think you did.
Yeah, I have. I haven't watched the series yet, but I read the three books in the series and really liked it. And from what I hear, and this is great, this is what I actually want to hear with TV adaptations of books, is that it's pretty different than the books, but it's great. And that's kind of what you want in a certain way, because if it's just a retelling of the book, I mean, sometimes that's perfectly fine too, and that's great. But I kind of like when they take the world and take the characters and maybe do some different things, because obviously television is a different medium than books.
And, so. And if you had watched the Dresden Files TV show, you wouldn't be saying that.
That's what I hear. Yeah, they need to try that again. I think they need to stick in the shot. What are your feelings about that, Kristen? Obviously, you're a novelist, and you have your series of books out there. What's your thoughts on television adaptations of series fiction?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I agree with what you're saying, but I also think that there has to be some kind of truthfulness to the source material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
we were talking about The Expanse on an earlier episode, and one of the reasons why I think that has been so successful as an adaptation is because James S. A. Corey, as everybody knows, Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank are quite involved in the creative process. They're producers on the show, I think.
And they're in the writer's room. And I think that makes a difference, because it's not just a bunch of people taking it and going with it. It's they're there in the room and they're helping.
I think another program that has done that very well is Diana Gabaldon's Outlander. Mm. She's been very involved with the production.
That's good to hear, because that's one that, because I read the first book in that series a very long time ago, and I haven't kept up with it, but I enjoyed it. And when the series came out, I'm like, oh, I'll have to check that out. And I've heard good things about it, and that's probably why. You know, you have the creator of the source material there. You're going to want to lean on that.
I think it makes a difference. It's and it makes a difference for the fans as well, because you don't feel like someone is taking your treasured thing that you have loved for all these years and reinterpreting it. Zack Snyder.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do internally with what kind of a contract the author has with the mm-hmm. production company and what have you, how involved they can become and so forth.
And I think a lot of the side stuff in The Expanse just comes from what Ty and Daniel did when they were developing the whole thing. You know, because they played it first as a role-playing game. And Holden and Miller were their characters. So they have all this knowledge that they can bring to the table and kind of use to expand that world and that universe that they've built. And I think that lends extra flavor to everything. And that's kind of what makes those episodes so great, because there was an episode in the season one where they did something completely different that wasn't anywhere near the books, but it was Daniel and Ty's favorite episode because they got to do something and add a little extra.
Cool. Awesome.
No spoilers.
My pick this week, real quick, is Tools of Titans, a book by Tim Ferriss. As people, longtime listeners of the show know, I do this thing called the slow carb diet. I've been doing it for 3 years, and it comes from Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss has a podcast out that he does too. And this book is essentially distills a lot of the tips that he's picked up from his podcast guests over the past couple of years. And I wasn't going to, I ended up getting it as a Christmas gift. It's a huge book. It's like 600 or 700 pages. And I thought, like, well, I've listened to most of these podcasts. I don't really need it in book form. But I ended up getting it as a Christmas present, and I just was sort of glancing at it, and I ended up tearing through the whole thing and having a highlighter. And it's just a lot of good advice for effective ways to live your life, especially if you are a creative person, you know, different sort of techniques and different routines. And, you know, it's all these very successful people in lots of different fields. Some of them are writers, some of them are actors and musicians, and some of them are investors, like all sorts of different people. And to hear how they do it, I think it's always helpful if you're striving to accomplish something in your life to hear how other people do it, because you might be able to pick up on something that may resonate with you and help. And so this book is great to have it in front of you rather than just hearing it while you're driving to work, to have it written in front of you and be able to kind of work through it. I thought it was great. So yeah, Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. That is my pick. Kristen, moving on, I do want to ask you, can you please, because you sort of hinted at it pre-show, can you tell us a story from your days as a ranger for the National Park Service? That is something that you spent quite a few years doing. Can you tell us a little something about that experience in your life?
Well, I worked for the National Park Service for about 15 years, six different national parks. The one that I was at longest was Acadia National Park up in Maine. Probably the strangest stories come from Mammoth Cave, though, down in Kentucky. I don't know what it is about caves, but they do attract strangeness. And you're down there in the dark, and we had a bumper sticker in our employee lounge that said, "Any day above ground is a good one." But yeah, I think one of the strange situations when I was trailing a tour, when we'd have a certain number of people, you would have a ranger up front who would do all the interpretation and talk about all the stuff. And then a ranger in the very back to make sure we didn't have stragglers who got lost down side passages or fall into any pits or anything like that. And so I was trailing this tour, and we're going behind a formation called the Giant's Coffin into a room called the Wooden Ballroom. And all of a sudden, a man that was in the back with me put his hand to his chest and, you know, had this gasp of breath. And I'm thinking, heart attack? You know, what's going on? And he said, "Somebody died here." And it turned out that he and his wife were psychics from Louisville, and they could sense dead things. Wow. Well, the interesting thing about the Wooden Ballroom was that dead bodies had actually been found there in the early days of people exploring around the cave. There had been Paleo Indians who explored the cave as well, and their mummified remains were found there.
Wow. Do you, when you were doing that, are you aware of like other parks and other caves and other places? Because like here in Colorado, we have Cave of the Winds. Have you ever heard of that one?
I've heard of that one. Yep.
And it's neat, but at the same time, it's also kind of difficult. I've never been in Mammoth Cave, but I've been in Cave of the Winds, and Cave of the Winds, they have like some very narrow passages where you have to kind of squeeze through to get to. And then there's like this very narrow staircase kind of thing that you have to go up through this hole. And there's a point where you have to bend over and almost crawl through. And it can be harder on older people. You know,
well, we had to give very strenuous warnings about the nature of going into the cave, because not only do you have difficult staircases and narrow passageways, but I'm losing that thought. You have people who are claustrophobic.
Yes, yes.
And some people think they can handle it, and it turns out they can't. We had to carry out people who freaked out in a passage called Fat Man's Misery. So you can imagine that's kind of a tight passage. Or people, I remember trailing this one tour where there was an elder gentleman, and he just kept on, you know, falling farther and farther behind. And of course, we'd given all the strenuous warnings about the stairways and so forth. And he said, "Well, I had both my knees and hips replaced." And he was so proud of himself for, you know, being able to accomplish the tour.
And it's really cold.
Well, the temperature is around 50 degrees consistently in the cave. Mammoth Cave.
Do you do the thing? So at Cave of the Winds, one of the things that we have lanterns, right? Because they do the thing where they turn off all the lanterns and you experience quote unquote true dark.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then like at the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland, do you then like step up right in front of someone so when you turn the lights on, you scare the crap out of them?
We didn't quite do that, but sometimes if you're trailing a tour, you would know secret little passages to show up in unexpected places and watch people go by and yeah.
And then I keep drawing correlations between the two, but there's also like they tell you don't touch the rock, don't, because you're gonna, it erodes the rock, and then there's like there's one spot where they say everybody can touch the rock here and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you have a cave that has limestone formations, stalactites, stalagmites, and that kind of thing, the oils on your hands can prevent the water with the minerals from settling and pretty much kills off the formation.
And then the last question, you know, as far as being a ranger, Bigfoot? Yes? No? Kind of, sort of?
Kind of, sort of.
Now, any experiences as a ranger or just your general day-to-day life as a ranger, I've got to think that had some impact on your writing. Are there anything specific or
general?
Oh, John, you should
read The Green Rider.
I know. Oh, hey, man, I got stacks of books.
Well, probably the biggest thing is that the landscape and setting of the books are very much like Maine. And my job when I returned to Acadia in 1992 was riding a bicycle on our historic carriage roads through the woods, alongside the lakes, over the shoulders of mountains. And so that started generating a lot of atmosphere for me and visualization. And all I needed was a horse instead of a bicycle. Plus, my uniform was partly green. So
that's cool.
So, yeah.
So they gave you, you're in the forest and they gave you a partly green uniform. So you blend in and no one would ever see you?
Well, the traditional park ranger uniform is green and gray. Yeah. Now, I don't think Hunter Orange would work or pink or,
Now you have your degree, you have a minor in writing, but your degree was in film production. So, if at all, what is your experience earning that degree in film production? How does that impact your writing, if it does at all?
You know, it's really interesting. I did sort of go into the cinema program thinking that was another form of storytelling, because I loved writing and reading from a very young age, and this was just another way of telling stories. And what I find is that, you know, I can really visualize scenes and so forth and even edit them, you know, filmically in my head. So I think that's what the biggest impact of that has been.
Now, along a similar line, like my co-host, you are a doodler. Although I've seen your drawings on your website and they're hardly doodles. There's Patrick's now showing some doodles there. What's going on in your head when you're doodling, and what function does that serve in your overall creative process?
Good heavens. I don't know if there's anything going on in my head. I think it's sort of filling that space where I don't know what to write next exactly. And it's allowing the brain space to sort of process.
So I have a question about your process. How far out do you plot? So how many books? Six now?
Yeah.
Do you have the whole series in mind? Like, do you know where it's going to go? Have you plotted all of that out? Have you bought the house across the street to like keep track of all the characters and stuff like George R. Martin?
No. I'm sorry. I have a general idea of where it's all going, but the most plotting I do is more for immediate scenes. So I have an idea of where I'm going to go. And this is just writing stuff down in my writing journal, like, okay, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. But it's not really a true outline.
And how do you pronounce the character's name? Kerrigan?
Gladian.
Gladian? Gladian?
Gladian.
Gladian.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how those questions are connected. So with the film production thing and the doodling thing, do you ever sort of like storyboard? You know, a lot of times when you see films, or especially with like animated movies, they have like, you know, your pictures and your storyboarding. Do you ever do any sort of version of that?
I don't storyboard, but if I'm, you know, sitting watching TV and I feel so inclined, I might, you know, sketch out a possible scene, you know, characters. And sometimes that suggests things to me, ideas.
Cool. And you spent a great deal of time around horses when you were younger. Well, first of all, fantasy fans in particular, I hear that's a very big thing with people getting horses right. I know people, authors catch a lot of guff from fans if they don't present horses right. So what was, you know, maybe describe some of the feelings that you experienced during a typical day working with horses. I know it's not something you do now so much, but you did do it quite a bit in your younger days.
Yeah, I was a horse crazy girl, and I didn't have a horse of my own, but there was a barn where I went to have lessons, and I would work for my lessons, you know, cleaning tack and sweeping floors and that kind of thing. And you become attached to certain horses. There was one named Carefree, and he was a chestnut. He was kind of tall and gangly, and he was my favorite. And he sort of became the model for the main horse in the story, Condor. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And now, do you get guff from fans about horses, or do they like, yeah, you nailed it?
I have a lot of fans who are horse people, and so far nobody has berated me about stuff. So I feel very fortunate.
Yes, because I know that's a thing. Patrick, I believe Jane Gates, our friend, I know she's a horse person. Yep. And I know she is someone that will call people on how they ride horses. Because I think a lot of times people write fantasy, you know, typically when you have a fantasy, a lot of times they're set in a world that has horses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But maybe you don't know anything about horses, so you can get the horses wrong. And I know some people will call you on it.
Jame and I have talked a lot about this because I have never been around a horse, and I've written some fantasy, and she's actually suggested that I could. One of the things that a lot of these horse rescue places, they need volunteers. They need people to come and help and do stuff. And it's just like with Kristen, you can go and then they will, you know, teach you about the horses as you're, you know, essentially shoveling shit. And I have considered doing that, you know, and just to have that experience and be able to go. And there's a place I pass it every freaking day on my way to work that is a place where they have horses, and they actually use them to help kids who have been injured or who have medical issues, you know, because it's something that it helps bring them out. And is a really therapeutic thing for them. And because the horses, they get, for these places, they get really gentle, special horses that, you know, just love kids and are willing to let these kids, you know, pet them and hang on them and all this kind of stuff. And I have really thought seriously about doing that. The only thing that holds me back, to be honest with you, is the stuff with mom and, you know, just not having the time.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier a little bit about, and Patrick asked you a little bit about with the type of writer that you are in terms of plotting and planning, but do you have a schedule for your writing? Do you have a morning ritual? Do you write in the morning? Do you write in the afternoon? Do you have, you know, do you eat a certain breakfast? Do you, you know, what's the typical day for you like in terms of, your writing life?
Well, mornings are pretty much anathema to me. I walk around saying, blarg, blarg, where's the tea? So I'm more of a night writer, and I'll sit in bed and I handwrite. And then when I've got some chapters, I will take them out to my studio and I will type them. So I don't know if I really have any kind of ritual that goes with it, but it's quieter at night. Nobody's calling to bother me, you know. So
Well, and that, but the, right there, that's a process that you don't hear too much of writing longhand first. And so you'll write it all longhand. And then as you get a couple chapters going, then you go and type it out. And I'm assuming you're maybe doing a little bit of editing at that point too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot happens during that process of transfer.
Yeah. So are you, we spoke to Jacqueline Carey recently, and she said that she really edits as she goes. She's, you know, really likes to clean. So would you say that you're similar? Or
I would say that. And then there's a lot of after the fact editing. What happens is I get a chapter, and even after it's typed out and printed out, I'll go over it and make some corrections. Then I'll present it to my writing group. They'll offer some suggestions, and then it'll go through the typewriter again.
When you say you're sitting in bed and writing longhand, have you ever gone and sat down to start transcribing that and realized, you know, at the end of your writing session, you were pretty much falling asleep and you can't quite make out the last few things that you wrote?
It happens.
And then you're going,
yeah,
dang
sometimes
it,
I'm like, so I'm looking at the draft and I'm like, what am I saying here?
You know, I can't do longhand because my handwriting is so horrible. I could be a doctor.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid and I was writing my first novels, I'm doing ear quotes. There was no computers. Hmm. And so they had to be handwritten. And back then I would be writing until 3 a.m. And so that just sort of continued into adulthood, especially when my job became sitting in front of a computer all day long. I didn't feel like going home and sitting in front of a computer to do the novel work. So,
it seems like a theme that pops up is that a lot of authors do work better at night. It always reminds me of an article that I read years ago, an interview with Frank Zappa, where he took that to the extreme, where he had a studio in his house and he wouldn't even start working until, you know, 11 or 12 at night. And he would just, and of course he didn't have a day job to deal with. This is all he did. And he would just record and compose his music all night long. And he viewed it as like he was going camping every night. And it's a little different nowadays because now there's email and text and people can get in touch with you at any time. But he would be like, yeah, the phone's not going to ring at that time. And I know I'm just going to have 10 hours to work on whatever I'm doing. Is that sort of the feeling like you're going camping every night, but by camping, you're going writing?
Yeah, I've not ever thought of it as camping, but yeah, it's just, you know, the whole idea that the world is asleep. But so I have this space to myself. And I don't have to worry about going to the grocery store, writing out the bills, making calls to doctor's offices, serving the cat and dog, you know.
Oh, those are big ones for writers, man. It's taking care of that cat and that dog. That's yeah. How many more books would be published if authors did not have cats and dogs? I do not know. Seems to be a common theme. Do you listen to music when you write? And if so, who are some of the artists and albums that you go to?
I do generally listen to music when I write, and my big go-to is Enya.
Sail away, sail away, sail away.
Yeah, I first heard her when I was in Kentucky at Mammoth Cave, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I listen to Enya a lot. A lot of instrumental, new agey type stuff. A lot of times, themes will come up, and so there's like theme music. Zoe Keating was kind of a theme for the last book, Mirror Sight.
Nice.
Yeah. And Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb has sort of become the theme for Kerrigan and book 7 as I'm writing it. So
did you ever go back into just, you mentioned Enya, and I liked the stuff that before she went solo with, when she was with Clannad. Did you ever listen to them?
Yes, I have listened to Clannad, and I'm not sure, though, if I have any of their albums with Enya on them. Mm. But I've also listened to her sister, Moya Brennan, who has a beautiful voice. Yeah.
Now, do you prefer instrumental stuff? Because obviously Anya's a singer, but you did mention instrumental. You can do both, because I know a lot of writers can't write to singing. They can't write to a voice that has to be instrumental.
And yeah, I can write to you because her voice is more of an instrument than an actual lyrical filled thing.
Yeah. Now, does she always sing in English, or does she sing in other languages?
Sometimes, yeah, it's Gaelic, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, she sings in Latin and Spanish, and her lyricist also developed a fake language called Loxian.
That's what I thought. So that's what I was getting to. I'm like, did I ever hear something about her singing in like a fake? And that makes it easier to write to, because you're not really picking up on any meaning in the words if you don't speak the language. And obviously, if you made up a language, you're probably not understanding it anyway. So that makes it a lot easier, I imagine. Now, before we start to get going here, I did want to ask you a few more things. But you mentioned how you started writing when you were very young. And I know that that writing grew out of reading for you. So who are some of the early authors that you read who maybe had an influence on your work as a writer?
Well, I think probably the biggest is not surprising, and that would be Tolkien. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine made me read it when I was 12 years old or so, and I was lost after that. Anne McCaffrey was another big influence.
I just got to meet Todd.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Cool.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And so that was a very influential age for me. And those authors had a big impact.
Yeah. Now, what age did you start writing? Because you were very young.
Well, I think that I started writing my first novel when I was in the fourth grade. So what is that, 8, 9 years old?
Yeah, I teach that age. I don't think any of my students are writing novels.
How do you know, John? Have you asked?
I'll ask on Monday. Yes, I will go and I will ask. I'm doing this thing where I'm writing the mute button.
Okay, I was wondering what was going on there.
Talking about 9 and 10 year olds, I have a son who's in the other room who came in the middle, and when I know he's here, I mute it when he's not, because our listeners don't need to hear about Plants versus Zombies every week. So. Well, okay, so you have your new book, which is coming out. It's Firebrand. It is book 6 in the series. It is out February 28th, which I believe that is the post day of this podcast. So if you're listening, everybody, go and get that book. Do you want to tell our listeners, is there anything else coming up? Are you going to be appearing at any cons? What's on your schedule? Are any other projects that you want to let them know about?
I'm going to be at Emerald City Comic Con, which is March 2nd to 5th. And I'll be doing some stuff there. So check the website, I guess, for Emerald City Comic Con. It's a mouthful. On the 26th of March, I'll be at the El Paso Library main branch doing a reading and signing. And then in May, I'll be at Ad Astra, which is early May, and that's in Toronto. Then I'll be heading over to Bar Harbor, Maine for a program at their library, the Jessup Library, on May 12th.
Nice. That's a nice schedule you have there. Emerald City Comic, that's one I have to get to. I've never been to Seattle before, and a lot of friends end up going to that con. And that's one every year when people are posting on Twitter and Facebook about it. I'm like, I'm sad that I'm not there. I wish I was there. It looks so cool.
Well, this will be my first big Comic Con, so it'll be very, very interesting.
Yeah, well, I'd like to say, yeah, because obviously it's a big comic focus, so that's one thing. And then
I'll throw it out there that my experience with the Comic Cons, and I've done the Denver Comic Con now, is it's like you have Comic Con, and then you have this literary track that's very focused and a little bit more intimate, and it's like all the people who really love to read are there, and it's still a really, really cool experience. But you do have Comic Con and then literary.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I'm quite the introvert, so we'll see what happens.
I'm sure it'll be great. So again, Firebrand's out now. Go to Kristen's website, kristenbritton.com. The book will be available, I'm sure, as an ebook and hardcover?
Yep.
Oh, yep. Nice. Yep. And do we know any word about audiobook yet?
That will be out March 28th. They're about to go into production now.
And same narrator?
Yep. Ellen Archer. Yep. She's fabulous.
Yep.
That's great. I'm so glad that you knew. A lot of times I ask authors and they're like, I don't know. I'm horrible. I don't know when it's coming out. So I'm glad that you're at it. Because I think I know a lot of our listeners, that's how they consume books. They are big audiobook listeners. So it's important, I think.
With being able to download them today, it's, you know, become a whole new thing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it used to be you had to have the CDs and prior to that, the tapes, and it'd be 10 CDs or 10 tapes. And it just wasn't really that feasible. Wasn't that convenient. Now it's like you put it on your phone and you're listening to it in your car and it's awesome.
And they publish a lot more fantasy now because of it. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Very good. Okay. Well, thank you, Kristen. For us this week, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/functionalnerds. If you dig the show, please consider backing us over there. Also, Patrick has a book out, just came out. It's Into the Fire, the Samantha Cain Volume 1. It's through Wordfire Press, available as ebook and trade paperback. Go and check that out. Patrick, anything else before we go?
Nope. Just want to thank Kristen for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Oh, no problem. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mo. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.